I need to get a proposal for National Blood Cancer Week. I suppose I'll have to give it to you.
Okay, we will call to order the Committee on Healthcare for April 25th, 2011, and we are graced today by the Honorable Senator Mona Sanderson. So we're going to redo the agenda and move to the third item on the list, because I understand she has someplace else to be.
Thank
Although
you.
There's nothing more important than being here.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'm Senator Lori Mona Sanderson, and I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview, and I'm actually chairing my health policy committee, and I've turned it over to Jeff Cruz.
I think I forgot to open a public hearing on SCR 12, so I'll open a public hearing on SCR 12, and you may continue.
Should
I apologize.
Reintroduce myself?
No.
All right. Okay. SCR 12 is a very simple bill. It declares May 6th through 12th as National Nurses Week in Oregon in recognition of nurses of the past, the present, and the future. And as most of you know, I am an RN, a nurse, a retired public health nurse, but I'm still an active nurse. This resolution originated actually with nursing students and new graduate nurses, and it's been a great experience for them. They did all the homework. They came up with the idea. We went through the legislative council process, and now it's on the floor. And they did come to testify over in the Senate, but I don't think they were able to come today, so I apologize for that. I know that one of the nurses works in the corrections for Multnomah County, and the other is at CDRC. So this is a great bill, and all nurses, I feel, need to be recognized. They make a difference every day in caring for their patients and advancing the profession of nursing and advocating for policies that improve the health of Oregonians. They're often recognized as the most trusted professional in America and is the only medical profession that has caring in its professional scope. So as Oregon and the nation seek to develop a healthcare system that really improves quality of care and improves the health of the population and contain costs, nurses are always going to continue to play a vital role in delivering care. So, and especially as the focus turns from shifts to primary and preventative care, this is where we nurses are at our best, and we're going to be ready to help meet the demands. So please, committee, let's honor our nurses by declaring May 6th through 12th as National Nurses Week in Oregon. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I have a serious question. I Senator, are you going to try and convince us that nurses are more trusted than politicians?
I think you've seen the data.
Even I'm not going to go there.
Actually, Mr. Co-Chair, I was also surprised to learn that RN is retired nurse. When the senator was introducing herself, I guess I was under different impression.
Registered nurse.
Representative Widener, we're going to leave it to you to make some sense out of this.
Representative Green, kind of brought it up, but I'm just kind of curious. If the senator, so you once gave up a life of being trusted to be untrusted. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
No, I can still be trusted in this body. I'm once a nurse, always a nurse.
Yes. Are there any other questions for the good senator before she gets mad and leaves?
Well, just a comment. Politicians and nurses both draw blood just different ways.
That's absolutely true. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm glad I came to this font of information.
With that, we'll let you escape. You know. Is there any other testimony on this?
No, Mr. Chair. No.
To hang around
with
a
that,
minute,
we will... None?
Laurie?
No. Okay.
Your work session?
Yeah.
Hang around a minute.
We will close the public hearing on SCR 12 and open a work session on SCR 12.
Mr. Chair, I move SCR 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Co-Chairman Greenlick moves SCR 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Good.
Seeing and hearing none, you'd like to call the roll, please.
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative
Yes.
Yes.
Excused. Oh, he's not here. I'm sorry.
I gave you the wrong information. Wednesday, you're going to be late.
I should have noticed.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. You have your day or week or whatever.
Yes. Okay. Senator, carry it on. Oh, no, she's not. You can't carry it on the floor. You want to carry it on the floor?
You need a carrier?
I'll carry it. Oh. Great.
Okay. Representative Doherty will carry.
Senator Mott, Senator, can I ask you, may I ask a question?
You may ask a question. We've lost control already, so.
We got two more bills, two more resolutions came to us from your committee honoring a couple of people. And we were having discussions before. Is it unusual to honor people who are alive, or is, I mean, could you just comment on how you came there?
We talked about that, and Senator Winters really felt strongly that she's not a member of the committee, but it said that sometimes we wait till after they have passed away before honoring them, when they have been doing such wonderful things in our community now. And we, as a committee, felt that that was appropriate in these two cases.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, with that, we are going to open... Oh, that's right. We're going to close the work session on SCR 12 now.
I know I keep waiting to be honored while I'm still alive.
There's time.
I mean, I understand the problem.
Yeah. It's only a matter of nominating.
I still have
yourself.
A priority bill, Mitch.
the last thing you do is a committee bill when that's through.
Send me the document.
Okay. With that, and trying to restore order to the committee, which seems to be not happening, we will open a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 4, and Mr. Hazelwood wishes to speak to us today.
And Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, SCR 4 comes at the request of Senator Jackie Winters. It's to honor the achievements of Dr. William, or as he's commonly referred to as Bud Pierce, and his wife, Dr. Selma Pierce. You have her; she's unable to attend, but you have her written testimony either in your packet or in your folder on the computer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Please.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, my name is Lee Hazelwood. I live in Staten, Oregon. I'm normally here to testify on my favorite program called OPI, as I have done for 25 years. This program has saved the state of Oregon millions of dollars, but I'm not here to talk about that today. I'm here to testify in favor of SCR 4. It has been my privilege to know Dr. William C. Bud Pierce and his wife, Dr. Selma Pierce, for a number of years. This special couple has been leaders in humanitarian services for many, many years. They are the type of people who need to be honored while they are still alive. Over the years, I have read as many as most of you have, the many articles praising them for their good deeds. I urge your support for SCR 4.
Any questions for Mr. Hazelwood?
Thank you.
You did a complete and wonderful job.
Actually,
okay. Representative Widener.
Just real quick, I want to make sure you still have Yamhill County found in the...
Sir, over the months since I've been here early, I have found Yamhill County, and it'll be noted in that paperwork that I've talked to you about many times. Thank you. Thank you for asking. And I have learned how to spell Yamhill, too.
Any further discussion on SCR 4?
As long as you can spell Raymond. We have written testimony.
Yes.
Yes. You've learned, you entered that in already?
I did. I referenced Senator Winters' written testimony, and then the OMA, Oregon Medical Association, just submitted some written testimony in support of the resolution from Dr. Lace. Okay. And Peter Bernardo.
Representative Doherty?
And just speaking to Senator Winters about these doctors, she had just nothing but praise in what they've done for people in Salem and in Marion County.
And
outside, the tentacles go far.
A personal note, I've known Bud and Thelma for quite a while, and it's amazing how many good things happen in the Marion Polk area that right on the list is supported by a grant from. they have been extremely generous with their funding on things and have had a very wide-reaching influence in the community. So it's a well-deserved honor. Anything else? Okay, I will close the public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 4, and we will open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 4.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 4 be moved to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Co-Chair Greenlake moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 4 to the floor with a be adopted resolution. Is there recommendation? That was the wrong word. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Aye.
Yes.
Wagner? Yes.
Co-Vice
Chair
Cannon?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair
Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Greenlake?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson? Aye. We will close the work session on
Carrier.
Oh, Carrier.
I'll do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Co-Chair Greenlake will be the carrier. And we will close the work session on SCR 4, and we will open a public hearing on SCR 11A.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, SCR 11 again is at the request of Senator Winters, who has also submitted a letter outlining her recommendations and commends Dr. David Shaw for his inspiring volunteer humanitarian services and his ongoing contributions to orthopedic care of patients in Salem and around the world. There's no fiscal or revenue on this, and nobody has signed up for the bill, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion? Seems like we have no testimony other than the written testimony.
Mr. Chair, the only discussion that I have on this is I don't know this physician at all. I'm sure there are dozens of worthy physicians around the state, and I'm just not sure what criteria we use, whether we ought to be thinking of some recommendation panel. I think this is not a bad idea. I think the notion of honoring people while they're alive is a lot better than honoring people after they die. But we ought to have some process and maybe to look for people who should be honored or something. So somehow we might want to think about this in the interim, talk to the leadership and see whether honoring folks from various lines of work is not a bad idea. It doesn't cost us anything to have a resolution, and if there are people honored, maybe we ought to create a kind of legislative prize or something that names a certain number of people gets nominations for it. So I'm happy to follow Senator Winter's lead on this, but I'm sure I have lots in my own district that would be logical to be honored just in the medical profession alone, and I'm sure there are lots of other folks that are worthy. So.
I agree. I think I trust Senator Winter's recommendation, but in a way we're almost setting a precedent because I have a number of people that I can think of off the top of my head in my district that would be worthy of being honored, not in competition with these people, but equal. And we might be opening the floodgates or something, probably a bad choice of words, but we might want to do, as you say, and look at this. Did you have a comment? Julie?
I'm just nodding my head.
Okay. I saw you nod. I wasn't sure if that was. Anyone else have any comments on this?
No, and just, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to see if we have some guidelines. I'm not sure. I concur. I think there are lots of people. I'm sitting here thinking of some of the people in my district. I don't know.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on SCR 11 and move to open a work session on SCR 11.
Mr. Chair, I move SCR 11 be moved to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Chair Greenlich has moved that SCR 11 be moved to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative White.
As I vote for this, I really hope this is a very honorable person because I have no idea who I'm voting for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way these, both of these are. There's no testimony here saying what accomplishments that anybody's had or anything, and it just seems kind of weird that whoever had this bill, they don't care enough to come in.
Well, this is Senator Winters. I understand she wanted to be here, but there's something came up that prevented
her. Ways and means isn't as important as us.
That's true, but any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to withdraw that motion and bring it back and ask for some testimony. I think it might be a useful thing. Do we have any written testimony besides the senators?
No. You're withdrawing?
I withdraw the motion.
Okay. Co-Chair Greenlich has withdrawn his motion. I'm thereby closing the work session on SCR 11 for the moment. Okay. We move on to... Where are we here?
You want to go in order?
Senate Bill 31. Okay, we will open a public hearing then on Senate Bill 31.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 31 comes to you from the Senate, where off the floor it was 29 ayes and one excused. The manager authorizes a person in possession of cremated remains to direct the manner of the disposition of those remains. It provides that cemetery authorities are not liable if a person in physical possession of the cremated remains consents to disposition within the cemetery. It also provides that the cemetery authorities are not liable for cremated remains that have been scattered within the cemetery without the authorities' knowledge. It provides that the cemetery authorities may dispose of cremated remains that have been scattered within the cemetery without the authorities' knowledge, and provides that person who has possession and authorized interment of cremated remains may authorize the disinterment. And we have the Association of Cemeteries here, Mr. Chair.
Okay, is Ty Cochran with us? I guess it's up to you at this point. Start by identifying yourself, please, for the record.
Co-Chair Thompson, members of the committee, my name is Ty Cochran. I'm the legislative liaison for the Cemetery Association of Oregon. I'm also the general manager of Bellcrest Memorial Park here in Salem, and I'm 27 years in the industry. I have submitted written testimony and briefly want to point out some of the problems the industry, but more importantly, the family members are facing due to the ever-changing care in the death care industry. Senate Bill 31 was drafted over a year ago and circulated to the industry associations and two of the regulatory agencies that oversee our industry. We have heard of no opposition to this point. One of the main facts I want to point out is the cremation rate has increased from 25% in the early 1980s when I came into the business to nearly 70% today in the state of Oregon. Family members are scattering ashes, they're taking them home with them, and they're dividing them up between family members. Back in the 80s, ORS 97, which is really the statute that governs our entire industry, was changed to address what the state considers the disposition of remains. At the time, the law was changed to consider final disposition of a body that was cremated to be just that, and the final disposition and the ashes became personal property. Family members who receive a portion of cremated remains do not fall into the class of legal representatives to dispose of remains. They cannot legally go to the cemetery, purchase a memorial site, and authorize the cemetery to place the ashes in a designated spot, although that person can go anywhere in the world at any time and do what they want with the ashes. I can give you an example if you'd like, but I think in the bill it explains that. Because of the ever-changing world of cremation, we in the industry have seen a significant increase in people coming to the cemeteries and simply scattering ashes on the graves. Of course, we have no knowledge of who did it, who the deceased is, or at the grave they scatter the ashes are, or if it's even a family member or not. Senate Bill 31 allows cemeteries to remove these scattered ashes without being held liable, and it limits the liability for both the cemeteries and the families. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Kinnemer.
Sorry, but how would one go about removing scattered ashes out of a cemetery?
Well, I've been in the cemetery industry for 27 years, and I thought someone may bring that up. I brought a picture of something I found in my cemetery just last week. These are ashes that have been scattered on a grave. We have no idea who they were or if they were put on the grave of a family member. We suspect that they probably were, but ashes just don't disappear. It could be very traumatic for a family member to come out and see those, not knowing who they were. And I've actually physically seen people do it, stood there and actually watched them. Some of them are doing it because of price. Some of them just, their family beliefs. But for us to go out and remove them, we could be held liable for that. Mm-hmm. The normal process is to peel a piece of the sod back and simply remove them in, because they don't disappear after a day like today. They kind of turn like into a cake matter, believe it or not, and they can stay there for a long time.
Other questions? On occasion, I've been engaged to fly ashes either out over the ocean or over the Cascades for aerial distribution. Does this bill affect that?
Co-Chair Thompson, it would not affect that. This is mainly what's happening in the cemetery. Yeah. And I can give you an example that we ran into, especially in the last few years. We've noticed that a lot of people, family members now, are splitting up ashes.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, when the bill was changed, ORS-97 was changed, it addressed casket burials. It did not address cremation. So the example I could give you is a gentleman dies, he's cremated, his wife has his ashes. The gentleman's family is at one ABC cemetery. The spouse, the widow, gives half of the ashes to the mother-in-law, who in turn wants to go place them with the rest of the family out at ABC Cemetery. ABC Cemetery cannot legally do that without the spouse's authorization. It's really addressing what happened in the bill that changed ORS-97 back in the 80s. It didn't address this huge influx in cremation. And we address this with the regulatory agencies, the State Cemetery Mortuary Board and Oregon Funeral Directors Association, and went to other states. And this bill was a long time in drafting. We wanted to get it right. So,
Representative Kennerer.
So what other regulations are there regarding maintaining or disposing of deceased loved ones' remains?
Well, Oregon is one of the most regulated states in the union when it comes to the death care industry. When it comes to casketed remains, mm-hmm. there's a tag identification number that follows along with a burial permit.
Yeah.
With cremated remains, that is not the case. The actual disposition takes place at the crematorium when it becomes ashes.
And once given to whomever it's given, it's considered theirs legally, or is there...
Representative Kimmer, it's considered personal property at that time. Unfortunately, back in the 80s when they changed the verbiage of disposition in ORS-97, it didn't address cremated remains.
Senator Parrish?
Thank you. Can you just describe for me, I guess, how where there is a liability issue for this? Because I guess... I'm assuming most of your funeral homes are private property, or your cemeteries are private property, and somebody's coming, and granted, it's ashes, but I guess I kind of liken it be no different if you had to go and do cleanup of some unauthorized vandalism of some sort. Someone's going to spray paint, you're going to go clean it, and there's no liability for that. And not to say that someone pouring the remains of their loved ones on your property is a vandalism, but I would imagine, how are you liable for being within your rights to maintain a clean and orderly premises on private property?
Representative Parrish, I'm not so sure as the liability there for us removing scattered remains on a grave. The liability more, in fact, comes with the example I gave earlier where the widow that had given the ashes, half of the ashes to the spouse, she came to the cemetery, interred them with the rest of the family, and that spouse did not want her husband's ashes placed out at ABC Cemetery. She came out to ABC Cemetery. She could be traumatized by that, and trauma liability lawsuits were very big in our industry.
Absolutely. But if you just explain to Representative Kinnemer that this is property, once it's been handed from the place where you get cremated, and then division of property, and that you split it up into multiple urns and everyone gets a piece of, you know, the pie, at that point, wouldn't the transference of property then say that this is my fourth of my loved one, and therefore I can put my fourth where I want?
Right, Representative Parrish, and that is true if they were going to the coast or up in the mountains to scatter them. They can do what they want with them. Unfortunately, ORS 97 has a list of legal representations that can inter remade remains, regardless whether they're cremated remains or a body. It's mainly dealing with the cemeteries. Cemeteries.
Representative Greenleg.
Yeah, I want to sound respectful here. But let me ask you, what's the real problem here? I mean, what if we didn't have this bill? And what does the bill do to solve the problem?
Co-Chair Greenlee, what the bill will do is limit the liability of the cemeteries who are taking this private property and interring them without the consent of the next of kin, which is in ORS 97-630. There's a list of people that can authorize the disposition of remains.
So this is only to protect cemetery owners from doing something they can or they may or may not do, right?
Co-Chair Granny, it's by state statute, we are to follow a list of representatives of the deceased when it comes to interring their remains in a cemetery. And in the example that I gave, without the authorization from the next of kin, which in this case was the spouse, we legally could not have placed half of those ashes in that cemetery.
So why did you?
We didn't.
And then the problem is?
We could be sued.
We're not doing something that's illegal to do?
No, for doing something.
No, you didn't do it. Okay,
right.
What's the problem?
Well, some people probably are doing it. And we as an association want to protect our members and, you know, other representatives of the cemeteries.
If I understand then correctly, if a third party with the ashes were to distribute them on someone's grave and another member of the grave owner's family didn't like that, they could sue you for mental distress?
Co-Chair Thompson, yes, they could.
Representative Parrish.
I'm still wrapping my hands around. I come into your cemetery sometime, whenever, daytime, middle of the night, whatever, scatter my share of, you know, my loved one's remains, and you need to clean that up. If someone cleans that up, you're liable for that. I mean, you didn't authorize them to be there. Liability implies that you had a hand in doing something wrong, and I'm still struggling to see how you're liable and why would need to go to this route to have you be able to keep a clean and orderly cemetery from people who are trespassing, essentially.
Right, Representative Parrish. You're right, but I guess what we're kind of getting at is that we can be sued for anything. Those are personal property, so if we remove this personal property, then we could be held liable.
Sue them for trespass? I mean, I guess.
No, it's like I say, we've in the industry, there's been some very large lawsuits, and I don't know if any of these have happened, but we definitely want to limit our liability.
Everybody does. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to stay out of this because this is our second mortuary board, but or mortuary third.
Third body parts bill.
But my question is, I buy my wife a plot where she's buried. Who owns the plot?
The cemetery.
The cemetery owns the plot.
The plot, in the state of Oregon, the right of disposition, you own the right to be interred there. The person who actually purchases the lot from the cemetery, they do not own the lot. They don't pay taxes on it. They can't do certain things on it. They can't plant a tree. They can't build a house. They own the right of human sepulture, and that's the right to be interred there.
Now, may I follow up?
Please.
So, if I have a plot for my loved one, and let's just say I pass away, my children have me cremated, they could not put me on the same plot where she is. Or how would they go about that? If they just said, hey, we want to dig a small hole here, we want to spread his ashes on top of mother.
Representative Widener, you could do that if they were actually interred below ground, but if they were interred above ground and we went out and removed them that afternoon after you did it, you could possibly come back and sue us for doing that.
Okay.
I mean, but for trauma. I mean, it might not be for moving them, but
if I may follow up on this, if they wanted to have me, they could come to you and say, hey, we'd just like to dig a small hole here. We'd like to put dad's ashes on top of mom. What would they be looking to do that process?
As far as fees?
Fees, whatever, are there fees to it? Or
well, all cemeteries have different fee structures. Some of the country cemeteries, you could probably just go out and do it yourself. No one would ever know.
Yeah. Because the thing I'm thinking about is the reason this might be coming up and the reason you'd have a cremation is to save money, and they may not be able to afford to do anything else. So that's probably what we're getting at here is people who are on a budget and can't afford and they want to keep mom and dad together. Would that be the primary one that you run into?
Representative Widener, there's certain, many cemeteries have certain rules and regulations where we allow so many cremations or interments per grave. There could be a case where there's already two sets of cremains and one ashes or three, and that's the amount that cemetery allows by their bylaws. And they came into the office and we did not allow them to put the fourth one there or the fifth one. And then they decided they wanted them together because that was their final wishes, and they went out and scattered them on the grave.
Representative Greenlick.
Yeah, it strikes me that if I own something and I go throw it away, I've abandoned it. Is that not true of cremains?
Co-Chair Greenlee, I believe what we're probably getting at here more than anything is that someone comes out and places ashes in a grave without the authority, of course, of the legal next of kin. They come out and possibly put a headstone out there with that person's name on it. The legal next of kin comes out and finds that those ashes are there, and that wasn't her wishes, and she never authorized that by ORS 97. I personally would come back and sue someone if they put my wife someplace I didn't want her.
Your wife.
If I gave half of my wife's ashes to her side of the family, but I didn't want her out there at ABC Cemetery, but they put her there anyway, I could possibly go out there and be traumatized by her being out there and sue that cemetery because legally they did not have my authorization per ORS 97 to place those ashes there. Even though it's personal property, like I say, this is more of a fix of what happened in 1980.
Has there been an actual case
There's been cases, Co-Chair Greenlick, where many cemeteries do not allow these partial remains to be placed because they're leery of being sued.
Now, my question is, not having this bill, has there ever been a case that this bill would have prevented?
Chair Greenlick, I'm not aware of any, no.
So we have some sort of mythical problem that we're trying to solve by this bill?
Co-Chair Greenlick, it's just in the past 10 or 15 years, the rate of cremation has just skyrocketed, and the ORS 97 has not kept up with the disposition part of that, and that's what we're trying to address here.
Representative Parrish.
You mentioned something a little bit ago, you know, Oregon is being the most regulated state for the death industry. Can you speak to that? I guess I'm just confused how they might do this in other states. Or we would probably be the first person to make a law like this since we're kind of on that regulatory path.
Representative Parrish, Oregon back in the 80s had some horrendous behavior, as you well may know, have heard of. And because of that was the creation of the Oregon State Cemetery and Mortuary Board. And but there's going about some other states. There's other states that have very little regulation in the death care industry. It wasn't up to a couple of years ago, the state of Colorado, you didn't even have to be licensed to be a funeral director. And so Oregon is probably in the top five.
Representative Hoyle.
Thanks for bringing this forward, and I do appreciate the laws and the work that went into effect because of the problems that we had, because, I mean, these are bodily remains, and I think, although I do share some of the concerns that Representative Greenlick has shared, in that if there hasn't been a problem, why do we need to do this? Having said that, I understand that the disposition of medical waste or of garbage or litter, I mean, you're responsible for keeping that cemetery clean, and remains, which there are very strict rules about how you treat someone's remains, and I can understand where the concern is, but I guess I'd like to understand more what, and I do understand making sure that we're keeping up with what processes we're using now and there's more cremations, but what really, if it wasn't an actual incident, what was it that prompted the request for this law? And again, I appreciate where you're coming from. I just don't understand why it was this that came out of the, that's being requested.
Representative Hoyle, I guess the crux of the bill is, other than the liability issue, is that the wish, cremated remains are personal property. When it comes to disposition of cremated remains in a cemetery, the laws really don't follow what they should for private property. We still have to abide by ORS 97 when it comes to disposing of them as it would be a casket. Cremated remains are really treated as a casket when they come to the cemetery. You can give half of those ashes and the mother can go scatter them at the ocean or whatever. She can't do that with a casket, of course.
She shouldn't. Maybe
right.
She could.
Right.
Good.
And so I guess it hasn't really been a problem, mm-hmm. but we have, many cemeteries have had to turn people away for fear of being sued, of that legal representative coming forward and said, why are my ashes here, even though that person gave those ashes up. No, she couldn't be sued. She couldn't sue that mother-in-law for taking half of those ashes and scattering them over at the ocean. She could come back to me as a cemetery owner or manager of a cemetery and sue me.
Please.
Or our attorneys seem to think so.
So this came out not as a response to a lawsuit, but rather as a response to a consumer need or request for services from cemeteries, and this industry has been reluctant to be able to do that because they don't feel like there's clarification in the law. So the reason you're asking for this is so that you can provide a service that's being requested by your clients?
Representative Hoyle, that is correct. We want to be able to let the families of these deceased dispose of the cremated remains as they wish, without then, and secondly, I guess, coming back to us without getting sued for doing so.
I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
I've handled remains before, and I think one of the issues might be, most people think of them as being fine powder that will just disappear, and depending on how they're secondarily processed, sometimes there's tooth fragments and whatnot that I wouldn't want to necessarily have scattered on top of a grave somewhere, and they're not going to dissolve into the background by tomorrow. So the lack of better terminology, it's an obvious litter problem that's going to be noticed, and I can understand your point about not wanting that to happen necessarily. Okay, if there's nothing else on this, I'm going... Oh, I'm sorry.
If I could, is there someone here from the mortuary board? I wondered, is there anyone here? I just, you know, I find it interesting that we have such a change in the way we're managing or in the way human remains are being processed. And we have no updating. I have empathy for your situation. I mean, you have some responsibilities to keep your properties up, and what can occur can be quite unsightly to some, and quite offensive perhaps to some. And I find it interesting that, as far as we can tell, these cremains are the property of whoever is in possession of them.
Yeah.
And evidently, that's the end of regulation, and I don't know. Maybe that's fine, but I'm just wondering if the mortuary board has any thoughts about updating that or something.
Representative Parrish.
I guess my concern with this is that we have an industry who's coming to us asking to limit their liability. And I'm a business owner. I don't do body parts for a living. I'd like this body to limit my liability. I'd like, you know, the guy who has the mechanic shop to limit his liability. I'm concerned about, we have one industry coming saying, limit my liability. We're not willing to do that for everybody. And that means medical malpractice caps, and it means all kinds of things. And the implication that one industry comes to us and says, this is to protect me, are we doing that for everybody else? And I guess I'm just not comfortable, even though the issue might be very valid. But if you're bringing it to me because it's a liability issue, then that's a broader conversation for every other industry in this state. And we're not having that in this body today, so I just can't be a yes on.
With that, I will close the hearing on House Bill, or Senate Bill 31. And I suspect I will be conferring with the co-chair about where we will go with this and the possibility of getting someone from the mortuary board to come in and enlighten us. But for the moment, we have closed the hearing. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 66.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 66 comes from the Senate from the floor with 29 ayes, 1 excused. This changes the chairperson of the State Medical Examiner Advisory Board, which is in current statute, from the chairman of the Department of Anatomic Pathology at Oregon Health and Science University to the chair of the Department of Pathology. It also increases the membership of the advisory board from 10 to 11 and specifies that the new member be from the federally recognized Oregon Indian Tribe. Directs the governor to appoint this member no later than January 1, 2013. It also has an emergency clause effective on passage.
And we have Dr. Karen Gunson.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Dr. Karin Gunson,
Karin, okay.
And I am the state medical examiner for Oregon. This is a housekeeping bill for ORS 146. When the bill was originally passed, there was a chairman of Anatomic Pathology of Oregon Health Sciences University, and for many years there has not been a chairman. There's only been the chairman of pathology. And so for many years, our advisory board chairman has been the chairman of pathology, and this bill proposes to change ORS 146 to follow our current practice. Senate Bill 66 also proposes the addition of a member of one of the federally recognized tribes here in Oregon. The advisory board has long filled the at-large position with a tribal member on our advisory board. However, over the years, we have interacted with the tribes on many situations which have we've come into conflict because of our various laws governing the investigation of human remains. Currently, we are working very closely together with the tribal members, especially on inadvertent discovery of ancient Indian remains. And indeed, we've actually done an educational video with them to educate law enforcement about how to handle those remains. So the advisory board wants to ensure this continued close relationship with the tribes by adding a tribal member as well as keeping our at-large member. This bill is supported by the Medical Examiner Advisory Board, by the 9 federally recognized tribes here in the state, and by the chairman of pathology at Oregon Health and Sciences University. We have no fiscal impact for this bill, and we request your favorable consideration.
Are there questions?
I wish you had any comments on the last bill.
Oh, no comment.
Representative Parrish.
Can you speak to why the state police asked this bill to come forward?
The medical examiner division is a division of state police.
Okay. All right.
We're their smallest division with only 9 members.
Oh, well, thank you.
Anything else? Seeing none, I will close the work or the public hearing on Senate Bill 66. And if there's no objection, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 66. Seeing none, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 66.
Mr. Chair, I move we move Senate Bill 66 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Greenlick has moved that we move Senate Bill 66 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
How do we know that this would have been unanimous, that one senator that was gone may have adamantly objected to this bill, so and swayed lots of people in voting against it?
You snooze,
but
you
I will support it, knowing that there were 29 of them that did.
You're not being helpful.
98% of life is showing up.
That's right. That's right. We've noted.
You think it's 97.
Duly noted.
Oh, okay.
Any other discussion?
Well, they got 90% of them showed up.
Seeing no constructive discussion, would you please call the roll?
Senator Doherty?
Yes.
Senator Parrish?
Aye.
Senator Boyle?
Yes.
Senator
Wiser? Yes.
Vice Chair Hammer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Greenlee?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hunt?
Aye.
And do you want to put that on consent?
Here we go.
I wonder if we shouldn't. I mean, that's...
consent calendar? Oh.
I would be willing to carry it because I could probably get a record carry with this one.
Whatever you want, a record do?
No, good bill should pass.
Representative Widener, you may carry this bill.
Oh, yeah.
If it's that important
ask
to you.
Ask him now, Schultz.
And the last one.
Blessings.
Okay, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 66. Okay, now it's going to get a little bit messy. We were on a roll for a while today. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 108. I'm going to ask our illustrious assistant here to tell us all the ins and outs on this bill, which are all hash marks on my notes.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 108, engrossed, comes from the Senate side with 28 aye votes, 2 no votes from the floor. It requires the health authority, the Oregon Health Authority, to establish and administer a statewide injury and violence protection program. It allows the authority to accept gifts, grants, or contributions from any source for the purpose of administering the program, and it continuously appropriates funds to the authority for the purpose of administering this program. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. It also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I do want to note that in your file and in your packet, you have an A2 amendment on this bill that's been withdrawn. So, and please ignore the fiscal impact on the A2 amendment, and please refer to just the original fiscal impact on Senate Bill 108A, dated 4/21. Based on the testimony that you'll receive, the co-chairs have agreed to submit a letter to rescind, asking to rescind the Ways and Means referral on this bill without the, as long as the A2s are not on the table anymore. So that's all my footnotes on the bill.
Thank you very much. And I see we have the illustrious Dr. Cohen ready to propel us into the future with this bill.
Co-chairs, vice co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the director of the Public Health Division and the state public health officer, and I'm here today to encourage you to support Senate Bill 108A. This bill simply establishes clear and unambiguous authority for us to continue to run our injury and violence prevention program at the Public Health Division. Injury is the leading cause of death for people between the ages of 1 and 44. There's a lot that can be done to prevent many of these injuries. We have, I think, a small but very useful program that has been running for quite a few years now. And again, the purpose of this bill is simply to make the authority for us to do that crystal clear, specifically with respect to injury prevention. Given the discussions that you've had already today, you might be asking, well, why do we need a bill to do this if we're already doing it?
Yes.
This bill will make things easier for us in two ways for this program. First of all, again, since it makes this authority crystal clear, since this is a relatively new area of public health practice compared, for example, to communicable disease control, it will make it much easier for us to explain to partners who we want to work with, perhaps get data from, work together on various interventions around this. This will make it much easier for us to work with them because it takes the question off the table, well, why are you doing this in the first place? So we have been able to get beyond that, but it takes a lot of time and energy to do that. And I think the other advantage that this bill gives us is when we do apply for federal grants to support these activities, it makes it clear that this is an activity that's supported by the legislature, by the state, and I think would strengthen our application. You all still would have the opportunity to give us permission to apply, give us permission to accept whatever funds we might get from those applications. This bill does not change any of that, but I think it does strengthen our applications in those settings. So with that, I think I will stop, and if any of you have other questions, I'll be happy to entertain them. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Dr. Cohen? Representative Widener.
I will go. Dr. Cohen and I had a very good conversation on this. Well, I thought it was very good. I don't know if he did or not, but
I did.
Because I was seeing this a little bit as a nanny state bill on some of the things. And one of the concerns I had as we're going through this, promoting injury and prevention and things like that, and one of the discussions we had was head injuries, because that's one of the things we deal with here, and I had brought up soccer with youth. And to me, this is setting a precedent for people to maybe say, should our kids be using their head to headbutt a soccer ball? Because we know it will cause damage and everything at the lower levels, and I'm just
wondering, we talked about it in the office a little bit, you had a little more time to think about it, and your thoughts on those type of things, because we also talked about playgrounds where kids can't play tag and other things because somebody might tag somebody too hard and they fall down, and now because one child tripped or something happened, all the children are not allowed to run and play. So when I see this and producing this kind of data, that's kind of my thought behind it, and I'd just like you to respond to everybody on the committee with that.
Co-chairs, Representative Widener, while we do injury prevention in the division, we also are involved in promoting physical activity, promoting play and other developmentally good things for kids to be involved in. And any sort of decision about all of that and how those various factors would balance out against each other, that would be a public policy discussion if we were to get in a place where recommendations like that were to go forward. This bill does not give us any authority to enact those kinds of policy decisions or put them in place. But what it does do, again, is make very clear that, we could look at these data, examine them on this or any other injury issue, and they would be useful in the public policy realm. I think we've seen this in a variety of ways. Some of the issues where injury prevention data have been useful for public policy discussion around, for example, domestic violence, suicide prevention, discussions about child safety seats and bicycle helmet use and so forth. Whether a policy or a law goes into place requiring some group of people to do something related to those issues is really a separate question from whether or not we have that information. And I think that the debate and the discussion is best when it's informed with the most accurate and useful information that we have available.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, we had a similar conversation, did not hit playgrounds, when the good doctor came to my office. And I guess my big concern about, looking at something like this is that, when you talk about communicable diseases, things that have clear pathology in H1N1, chickenpox, syphilis, HIV, things that have clear pathology that we can actually prevent, I'm on board with that as a public policy health issue because it's clear and defined and there's an outcome and there's a way to solve, to some extent, or prevent, limit some of those things. But I'm watching my kids this weekend trying to do front flips on the trampoline with no helmet. Granted, we have the little sideboards around it, and I'm freaking out waiting for them to break their neck, and I have to remember I can't mitigate every risk that there is. And we talked about suicide prevention and, the notion that a brochure that the government puts out is not going to stop a 13-year-old girl from slitting her wrist in the bathtub or a 65-year-old man who shoots himself because he's lonely. I just don't see that that's the most effective use of our government dollars, potentially. And we had that conversation, and, I'd like to be able to put our dollars where we're really going to truly get the outcomes. And I might, like I said, my kids wear a bike helmet. We'd have a whole other public conversation if they didn't, but, and a whole other agency be involved then. But, I'm worried about this. This feels like a segue bill to me. I said that to you in my office, that this is the start of a conversation that in a subsequent legislature it comes back for another ask. And I don't have clear definition that this doesn't do that. I guess if somebody brings something to me and asks, I'd like to see here's where it goes, here's where we want to end, what are all the steps in between, and nobody ever brings us bills like that. That's not to, we had that conversation not just about this one, but in general. I want to see what the full end game is, and we don't see that on these bills. So I'm not real comfortable with this ask right now.
Representative Doherty.
When you talk about the risk management and so on, is it not true that maybe 10 years ago, football players in high school would get hit, injured, they get hit, they'd be out, they'd be, whatever, and they were never really brought in to see whether they had a concussion? And has that, because of programs like this, gone to it now that there is a very, very good concussion prevention awareness with high school coaches and with youth coaches? And so does this kind of answer her question a little bit, that this 10 years ago, concussions were not in the forefront, and now we've done something about them. Is that kind of a comparison, maybe?
Co-chairs and Representative Doherty, yes, absolutely. That is an area, concussions and the whole question of the impact on athletes, that is an area where I think we've made a lot of progress in terms of injury prevention. Kids are still playing football, but hopefully doing so in a way that's safer for them and, you know, doesn't result in a spinal cord injury or some serious kind of brain injury as well. So I think that's a good example of some good injury prevention work that's been done.
Please. Because I know, at least with high school football coaches now, they no longer say, oh, just walk it off. They take it very, very seriously when a player has been hit. So I just thought maybe this gives an example of where something started out as maybe not a problem or we didn't think it was, and now we've got a very good program to try to deal with the head injuries for football players.
I guess come at this just a slight variation on this angle, and I wonder about the precedent of doing this. Last time we gave you quite a bit of authority, and are we going to itemize each detailed part of your work plan? I mean, that's a pretty interesting path to go. And it's got its liabilities and assets. But I'm just wondering about the practicality of an organization that has as large a mission and important a mission as yours, and us dictating each itsy-bitsy piece, component of it. And, you know,
co-chairs, Representative Kinnemer, I hear you. I'm very flattered that you trust me with a great deal of authority. That's a huge honor to carry this out. And in fact, the current authority of the state public health officer is to protect the health and safety of Oregonians. That's a very, very broad kind of authority. I guess with respect to this bill, I think, again, because of the problems that we've experienced with this program, I think it is worthwhile to call it out at this level of detail. I think it would be a help for our staff and, again, you know, help us be more focused on providing the kind of information and services to people that makes sense.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we put it into statute, because with me, when I have guys that work for me or managers working for me, I trust them to run their department in a thorough and efficient manner. Once we put it into statute here, doesn't it kind of mandate that we have to do it? So then if we ever want to change or we run into a budget crisis like we're in now we're mandated to do this because we put it into statute, and it's very tough for us to start repealing a lot of this once we go back after it. So once we say, hey, you're going to do the studies on this, and we're going to put people in place, and we need these reports, that means we have to have a person there to do that all the time. And when we leave it alone, you can do it at your own. If you have extra personnel to do it, you can do it. If you don't have the extra personnel, then you don't have to do it. And for me as a department manager, I'd kind of like it that way a little better, but if I'm a department builder, I'd probably like it this way better, because now I can say, hey, I need this staff to do this because it's in statute and I'm mandated to do it. So,
co-chairs, Representative Widener, there's no additional activity that's required in this bill that we aren't already doing, and there is no fiscal impact to the bill as it's written. I hear what you're saying, and I think that's a legitimate decision that you all make every day about which things should be funded. And, you know, when we have limited state funds or limited funds of all kinds, what they should be spent on. So this bill does not change that oversight in any way or limit that or reduce it.
I think this is a laudable activity. I think I would just kind of share some of what Representative Parrish had to say. I would be very disappointed to find us going down the path that New York did last week and require regulation and permitting for wiffle ball and tag and horseshoes and four or five other kid games, which, and every time you get into regulation and permitting, you've got fees attached to it. And, you know, that might be going overboard, but I think the idea of tracking injuries and reporting back on the problems identified is reasonable. So with that, I would proceed cautiously, I think. Any other comments?
Well, just a comment. I'm going to go back to the concussion thing. I mean, they have not, you know, said you can't play football, you can't do this,
right,
you can't do that. And I'm probably the only person up here on this panel that is not a parent. But, you know, I look at the kids in my neighborhood and the sports and the activities and the things that they're doing, and I would encourage the state to be able to go through and say, man, we're having a lot more concussions, or we're having a lot more broken bones with dodgeball. Remember, we used to be dodgeball. Don't play dodgeball anymore because of broken bones and that kind of thing. And I would be comfortable as knowing that my state health department was looking out for that. So that's kind of the perspective that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen any curtailing because I think they could have curtailed football a lot with some of the injuries we've been doing. And they have not done that. They've become just been more of an awareness program. And this is what we can do to help not have as many concussions or to identify them earlier, or as soon as a kid throws up, you send them to the hospital kind of thing. So,
Representative Parrish?
Thank you. I guess with I don't know who has the answer, but with regard to like a concussion piece, did that come from the government or did it come from like the pediatricians? Or, you know, where did that come from? And what, you know, I just kind of curious sometimes how I got to live to be almost 37 years old and haven't died yet when you lived in the back of your station wagon and you drank unfiltered water. And I mean, I worry about that. I worry about that path that we walk down, that we start to, you know, I don't want kids to get injured. I'm a mom. I have three boys, right? And we kind of spend quite a bit of time sometimes at the hospital. But I just don't think we can mitigate that risk. I don't, you know, study it's great, but to try to, you know, curtail it, not high on my to-do list.
On the other hand, you know, as a former soccer coach, I learned a lot from these kinds of injury studies and how to protect the team. And I don't remember that we were regulated to do anything, but there were certainly good information available that we could apply both in recognizing injuries when they happen that might not be apparent otherwise, and in things we could do to prevent injuries. So there is a basis, I think, in knowing what's going on out there, tabulating the kinds of injuries that occur, and paying attention or getting information out where people can pay attention to it. Representative Doherty.
Well, and it is a progression. I mean, when I was growing up, baseball players did not wear helmets.
Right.
Little League and Babe Ruth, they just got up there and were hitting the head with a ball. And that's progressed to now they wear helmets, now they have ear covers, that kind of thing. So still playing baseball, they're still going at it, they're still sliding into home plate with a catcher there, but there's some things that they learned through the injury process.
Leave it up to Dr. Cohen to direct the soccer players will wear helmets.
I don't know if that'll happen.
Anything else before
Wait
we
a minute here. Welcome to
state. Yes, you have the final word.
Co-Chair Thompson, Representative Parrish, Representative Doherty, I certainly agree that there's a balance that needs to be struck in all of this. And we're not about zero risk for injury in all situations. Of course not. But I think the concussion example is actually a very good one where data collection by injury prevention programs at the state and federal levels have played a very important role in defining that, in fact, there is a problem and that there are some things that we can do about that. yes, there were researchers out there in the pediatrics world who either did additional studies or used the data that were collected by injury prevention programs to do some further analyses that contributed to all of the policy debate around this. Absolutely. I don't want to, certainly wasn't government alone that brought this up, but you know, I think you have to look at the whole population in order to understand what's happening. For an individual pediatrician, you know, you're looking at one individual patient all the time. It's sometimes hard to see the real patterns and problems that are emerging out there. So I think that's really where the value of this kind of approach comes in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quiet today.
Just a quick comment. I appreciate this discussion. I think actually the questions and the answers have been very interesting, and I think the committee's raised a number of the thoughts that were on my mind. I found this really useful and appreciate that.
Thank you. If there's nothing else, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108. And we will not be working this bill today because we need the letter rescinding the Ways and Means before we cleanly move it forward. I thank you for your input, and you'll be hearing more from me, I'm sure.
And just for the record, Mr. Co-Chair, I believe Genevieve passed out a letter of support for SCR 12 from the Oregon Nurses Association that I'd like to acknowledge for the record.
Okay. Is there anything else for the good of the committee? Seeing none, we will adjourn the House Committee on Health Care for April 25th.